Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Wednesday, the 10th of July. Very nice to have you with us on this sultry. Is that a word? Is that an appropriate word, do you think, for this morning? It's warm, it's hot,
sexy.
Humid.
There's
sultry.
No sex involved.
Especially in this room.
Hazy.
I resent that.
I'm at the chilly temperature, not the company.
Okay.
Careful.
All right.
That's why we love Rosemary.
Yeah, it's a good morning already. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome. And it's a lovely, lovely day. Let me introduce everybody. We got a good group this morning.
That's going to take a half an hour.
Oh, come on. We're going to have like double the fun tomorrow. So don't, this is great. This is just
practice
for tomorrow. All right. Rosemary Armeo is here. She's an investigative journalist joining us. Good morning. Hello. How are you?
Hello. Good.
Wonderful to have you here. Ira Fussfeld, fresh from the Media Project, publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you for having me.
Very nice to have you on our program. Dean of the College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Security, and Cybersecurity at the University at Albany, Robert Griffin, joins us. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning, Joe. And I just want to note that I'm much more sober than I would be if it was a Christmas party, as Ray was referring to.
Yes. No, I... Well, Bob, whatever you need to do. Chris Churchill is with us, Times Union columnist extraordinaire. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. Good.
Wonderful to have you. And Jen Smith is here, Berkshire Eagle reporter. And thank you very much. Good
Ahoy.
To have you here. Ahoy. And Alan Chartok, good morning. Welcome as well.
Hello.
All right, let's get started. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org, and we love to hear what you have to say, at least most of the time. Let's go to what is happening in the world, and there is a lot going on, and we could certainly start in many places. I think I would like to go to the because I don't quite understand it, and that is the census question legal team switch, which was not allowed story. I was trying to put that in three words when I was sending out a rundown tomorrow for today, and I had trouble with it. So a federal judge rejects the Trump administration's bid to swap out lawyers for the census case on the citizenship question. You'll remember we discussed this last week, where the Trump administration didn't like the job that the legal counsel was doing and wanted to swap out the lawyers. Now the Justice Department's bid to change out those lawyers has been blocked by a federal judge in New York who said that the request to do so was, quote, patently deficient. The department had earlier this week announced its intention to swap out the legal team on the case. A person familiar with the matter said the decision was driven in part by frustration among some of the career lawyers who had been assigned to the case about how it was being handled, though the department wanted to replace those in both career and political positions.
Well, it was a stall. That was obvious. The idea was you change out the lawyers, and that keeps it going, and then it stays in the courts for a longer time, and that's what this was all about. But my feeling has been right from the beginning that what Trump wants to do is give this whole thing as much publicity, which will scare off the people who would answer the who are being asked to answer the question. I think that's what this is all about. It's obvious.
You are shaking your head, Rosemary.
Yeah, because the administration does not want to keep it in the courts. They want a fast answer and get going. They've been arguing up to now that this is an emergency and we need action right away. By July 1st, supposedly, the census had to be printed. So I think that this is a procedural step by the court, and it isn't going to mean anything. They'll come up with a reason for swapping out the lawyers that fits the rules. It's a misstep by Trump.
As you know, Rosemary, I have nothing but respect for you.
Uh-oh.
But you're wrong. The reason this is, look, Trump doesn't. If he doesn't get a win, what he wants to do is to warn off all those people who are undocumented not to answer the doorbell. And the more he does this kind of thing, and the longer it lasts, and the more noise he makes, the better off he thinks he is.
I don't disagree with any of that. But what this story is about, a procedure, a step by the court, because they did not follow a specific basic rule that says if you want to change out your lawyers, you got to tell us why. They did not do that. The court slapped him down, and the press is reporting it because actually Trump is right. We do tend to like it, and I'm among them, when he has a loss. And so this went against him, and we're reporting it like it's a big, huge deal. I don't think it is.
Bob? So I think you're both right. I do think that's what the president
diplomat.
Wants.
Well, hey, Bob,
that's not going to work in this room.
No, if we're balanced on a cliff and you can only pick one.
Hey, Bob, you're half right.
As my friends would say, nothing in the middle of the road except dead armadillos and yellow lines, right? part of this is that there's a web of lies that have gone on from the administration on this case about urgency and how there's national security implications and it has to be resolved. The team of lawyers that they had working it were experts in census issues in administrative law. They did what they did. The court ruled against them, and now they're going to be replaced by ideologues. Mm-hmm. In fact, if you look at the team that the administration is proposing, it is a dog's breakfast of attorneys from across DOJ that I think were picked more because of their loyalty to the president and to the attorney general than their knowledge of the law.
What's a dog's breakfast?
I'm with you.
A dog's breakfast, armadillos. Where were you brought up?
Yeah.
Now, what is a dog's breakfast?
A dog's breakfast is a combination of anything that's left in the refrigerator to feed your dog. Except, except my dog
letters
gets...
from the dogs are going to be flooding.
Oh, yeah.
What's
yeah.
Murray say about that?
Well, it's true. Murray had exactly that kind of breakfast this morning. Bob's right on.
Well, you know, you said, Joe, at the beginning that you didn't quite understand the story, and I'm not. Take a leap that you didn't understand it for the same reason that I didn't, although Rosemary just alluded to it. I was surprised that they could tell anybody in court that they can't change their representation. Mm-hmm. Now, if they did it because, as Alan says, they're trying to stall and the judge is saying, don't screw around here and keep changing lawyers on us, couldn't he not have said that? But aside from that, I just didn't understand why they're allowed to change.
I didn't understand that. I didn't understand from the time that they decided they were going to change the legal team, I think, on Monday to come to Wednesday, that it would even take that long them to make that decision, and especially if the clock is ticking. That was another aspect I didn't understand.
The timing of all of this is just really strange. The fact that we have now breezed by that July 1st deadline to print and things were already being printed, but if they're going to change, like how costly and efficient
it was an
is
artificial
that?
And made up deadline, right? I mean, I think that's the problem. I think that's kind of why some of these lawyers might want off the case, because they realize they've made a series of arguments that have either been tossed aside by the Supreme Court or mm-hmm. have been proven to be false, and they can't continue on the case making entirely different arguments without losing all credibility whatsoever.
Right. And I think that's the problem. I think there's nothing settled going forward. And so to, you know, have this change happen late in the game. But why it is taking so long?
Well, the other side objected, Jen. The other side that's arguing against the ACLU and all said, no, you can't do it. Mm-hmm. And they refer to rules which are in the federal court procedure that when you change lawyers, you got to tell us why and it has to be germane to the case. And the government just said, we're changing lawyers. They didn't give any reason at all, which mm-hmm. the judge was really annoyed
about.
But
they could have made that decision a lot earlier in the game, too.
They could have. Who? I'm sorry.
The administration in terms of the lawyers they wanted to change, too.
Right.
They just want to keep it going. They just want to keep it out front. That's what this is about.
Chris?
I don't agree with that. I don't think they want to keep it going. I agree with Rosemary. I think they want to get it done as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. I mean, their objective is to get the question on the census. Mm-hmm. If it drags out, it won't be on the census. And
they're
by the time people are actually filling out the form, it'll all, you know, this whole debate will have been forgotten, assuming that the average person is paying attention to it anyway.
They are not going to win. We all know they're not going to win. So now the idea is to keep going, keep talking about it, so that the people who have to answer the question will stay away from the door and not answer it. That's what this is about. I can't believe you people don't understand this.
I don't think it's so evident that they won't win. This is a Supreme Court that is, while saying, hey, your reason is contrived, has made very clear that the president does have a lot of power in what goes on the census. And if he does an executive order, I think that they would uphold it. I don't think that's right.
I think that I don't agree with Trump on this nor on most things for any number of reasons. And I'm not what I'm about to say should not be a suggestion that I agree with Trump. But you can make the argument that it is important to know whether the people in this country are citizens or not.
And sure. That, and it's, well,
the problem is that he wants to use it for nefarious reasons.
Right. And it's something that we do survey with the American Community Survey that happens not to as wide a population, but 1 in 38 people are asked that mm-hmm. question when they get that survey.
And then there's his own comments, which is, we need this for redistricting.
Yeah. And I think that's therein lies the.
Right. Yeah, you're standing there with your cards, and you're just saying, oh, look, I have an ace and a jack.
Yeah.
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 I mean, show everybody the
It's just like when he was trying to get the Muslim travel ban passed, and he's telling the Supreme Court, no, it's not a Muslim travel ban. And to his rallies, he's saying, keep those Muslims out. It's the same exact thing. He's got a big mouth. It puts his agencies trying to affect his policies, nefarious as they are.
Yeah, the lawyers just slap their heads every morning when they read the paper.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I actually agree with Ira. I don't think the question itself is that objectionable. I mean, we've asked it before. We ask mm-hmm. a lot of other very personal questions, especially in the long form. Mm-hmm. Will it? I don't know if it will discourage people or not, but there are probably a lot of questions on there that might discourage people.
Well, the redistricting issue is, of course, one. But the fact that if somebody admits that they're not a citizen, then it's entirely realistic to expect that the black car with the ICE agents are going to be outside the door the next day. And so that's the loose end. I'd want to know how many people in this country are citizens, but I wouldn't necessarily want to deport them, those that are not, particularly those that are come here for asylum.
And I think that's the biggest problem I have, is that if the use of the question was purely for demographics and understanding what this nation looks like, that's a different issue than the fact that this is going to be used as a weapon, particularly against blue states. Let's be completely honest right. with this, is that yep. this is meant to make it as difficult as possible for a complete census of people living predominantly in urban areas, predominantly in blue states, as a way of trying to keep to control Congress. I mean, it's
predominantly
that's just one
Democrats.
Element of
I'm
it.
Actually not sure that I even – I mean, that may be what the Trump administration is thinking, but I don't think – if you look at the map and where undocumented immigrants live, they're not necessarily concentrated in blue states. They're in places like Texas and Arizona and New Mexico and Florida. You know, I think whatever the rationale may be, I think this could end up backfiring on them if it did go through.
Sure, and there are undocumented immigrants all across the country, but I think when you look at the preponderance of locations, they are typically in urban areas, and urban areas are typically more Democratic than they are Republican. So even, you know, Texas is a really
right.
good example.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Those are blue cities in a red
exactly.
state.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it starts to tip the balance of the congressional districts more towards the purple.
Let me tap into yep. your expertise, Bob, of Homeland Security. How important is the census in the work that is done in the Department of Homeland Security?
So it's incredibly important when you start to look at issues like grant funding. So when you start to look at state-based or urban area-based grant funding, when you start to look at overall planning, it's incredibly important. It's one of the sort of fundamental building blocks that all of the government agencies use when they start to think about where they locate, where they provide services, how services are provided. So this is one of those pieces of information that everybody needs to be clean and pure in order to be able to be effectively used. And so the politicalization of this becomes really insidious, and it goes beyond just the gerrymandering of districts. It really does get into basic services that are provided or not provided.
Anybody? Well, you stunned the crowd, Bob. Good for you.
Well, I think, in the grand scheme of things, there are bigger issues with the census than this one question. I mean, you know, people can perfectly skip the question. I think there's bigger issues that are going on in terms of cybersecurity with the census. This will be the first year where there's a massive push to put this information online, who's watching and protecting, and who has access to those databases, who doesn't. Just right now, it's the time when census workers are going out to confirm addresses, and there's some controversial stuff happening. There's people using GIS systems to map neighborhoods, so there's, you know, surveillance going on. What's happening with that information? Do people know what a census worker looks like versus an ICE agent? You know, they're spirits. There are a lot of important things to know. So I think in the bigger picture of things, there are greater security and personal information concerns than just this question alone. If you skip this question on the census or any other question, you're still going to be counted in the head count.
For his part, go ahead.
Well, you know, I was just going to say, Joe, I know you're reading the letters today, and I appreciate that. But we got one from RWS who says, Alan is right. I wanted to read that one. Trump is just keeping the census question thing in the news for as long as he can. That way, regardless of whether or not the question even gets on the census, the word gets out to the that undocumented individuals should not respond to the census. The media, as usual, is just doing his bidding, just as they did during the campaign, to give him maximum coverage.
What would that person want the media to do, not cover the story?
Well, I don't think the real question here is what the media is doing. I think the real question here is what Trump is doing and why he's doing it. And I think, you know, his letter, which starts, Alan is right, is exactly right in itself.
Alan is not right, and neither is the letter writer. I want to make the Libby Post comment here that, adding on to what Jen said, there are really lots of other issues on the census as we zero in on this one. LGBT questions have been removed, for example. So she points out that funding for health care and for other issues.
And this is getting to Bob's question, especially when it comes to grants and
exactly
and
what's
money.
On,
exactly.
What's not, you know, what's actually helpful.
Yeah.
For the president's part, he said on Twitter, quote, so now the Obama-appointed judge on the census case, are you a citizen of the United States, question mark, won't let the Justice Department use the lawyers that it wants to use. Could this be a first?
Probably not.
Probably not. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be back right after this.
Coming back.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Jen Smith, Chris Churchill, Robert Griffin, Ira Fussfeld, and your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Just heard the music of Leland Sundries from his new EP, Pray Through Gritted Teeth. And he's going to be playing shows in Hudson and Kingston. LelandSundries.com. Those shows will be this month, and you can find out all about it by going to WAMC.org/roundtable. The playlist is there and information as well. Okay, we have letters. We go to Bobby and Troy saying, can you please explain to me how this works? I always thought the Supreme Court has the last word. How can the president do an executive order demanding the citizenship question on the census when the Supreme Court has ruled against it? Please discuss. Well, I don't think he's done the executive order yet, right?
No, he hasn't. No. And the Supreme Court didn't really rule against the question. What they said was, you haven't given a good reason. The one you gave us was contrived. That's messed up. So he can come out with an executive decision, and it would probably be contested by the same people contesting the question in its current form. And that would go to the Supreme Court. And there is a good chance that they would rule the president has the right to do it.
But there is a profound question, Rosemary, on the letter writer's point. This is a guy who doesn't believe that other branches of government have any real rights, and who will overturn them by his own fiat. And he has done that all along. And that is what, when that happens, we have what's called a constitutional crisis. Does the Supreme Court have its sway, or is it going to be because the president just says it's the way it is? That is really where totalitarianism begins to begin.
So far, however, he has not actively defied another branch. He has found ways around it. He put in three travel bans before he got one that stuck. And I can't see him saying to the Supreme Court, you know, F you, I'm going to do what I want. That's not the way it would work.
Well, so. Wait. Isn't this the same guy who won't allow his people to respond to subpoenas from the House of Representatives?
Correct. And so far, he is within his legal rights to do that. That has not been contested.
Well, that's unclear. I think that's unclear. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. I don't know why you've become such a passionate defender of the president.
Oh, give me a break.
Why don't you got to
take off your MAGA hat.
Yeah, turn on the feed. She's wearing a MAGA hat this morning.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to other letters. Alan, I don't write them. I just read them. Paul says Alan is wrong. Oh. Alan misses a key point about the census question about the Trump administration's strategy, quote unquote, to keep the issue in the news. That assumes the administration has a strategy, which is obviously not the case, or most cases. The British ambassador hit the nail on the head when calling the administration inept. They have no idea what they're doing. That is both comforting as one who does not care for the administration and equally terrifying. Happy Wednesday, Paul.
Well, since Alan is the butt of this, let me just respond and say, wait a second. No matter what you think of this guy, and I don't think much of him, that's for sure. He had a strategy. It got him elected president of the United States. He's overturned climate change, and he's in the process of doing that and a lot of other damage here. No, he has a strategy. It's an unfortunate, despicable strategy, but he has one.
And it's now the former British ambassador.
Yes, he has resigned.
And this is a tactic that he's used his entire life, right? Any time that he's faced adversity, particularly in the courts, he has continued to double down, triple down, continued to never give in, and that's been his MO all the way along.
Absolutely, and not pay up when
not
he's been ordered to.
Exactly.
Robert writes, Bob from Schenectady writes, I'd like there to be some discussion about how rural areas count the prisoners in their communities who often come from urban areas in their census. This artificially increases the number of people in those communities, positively affecting representation and the amount of money they receive from the federal government. Meanwhile, the urban areas those prisoners come from and return to are negatively affected in representation and federal money. This unfair result of census should be changed so that prisoners are counted from the communities they come from and not from the areas that they currently reside in.
Isn't that a similar issue to college
yes.
students?
It is.
Yeah, that yeah. comes up all the time. Do you count? You come from New York City and you go to SUNY New Paltz. Where do you live for
right.
the purposes of the census?
In that situation, should be where you register to vote. So that's where I would say for the college mm-hmm. students, the issue with prisons, I think he's spot on, is that the writer is spot on, is that it's it does artificially inflate certain counties where their main industries are prisons.
Interestingly, though, when prisoners are given the right to vote in the few states that do allow it, their vote is counted where they came from. So they don't want them overwhelming the local rural elections, but you know, for the purpose of the ballot. But when it comes to the census, they're perfectly happy to have those numbers.
And Ira is right. They tried that very thing with the students, and federal judge Neil McKern ruled against them and said that you vote from where you are. And yes, that's right.
Daisy writes, the Supreme Court has signaled if Trump asks the question for the census the right way, they will allow it. Alito
yes.
even signaled to him how to do it.
Yep.
The end of democracy is nigh.
Mm-hmm. Yep, we are doomed.
And that is a strategy. for those people who think Trump doesn't have a strategy, read that letter again. Exactly right.
Suzanne says many people are not citizens, but not necessarily undocumented. Many are here with green cards, with visas, etc. Right?
Yeah.
You agree with that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or in the queue.
Or in the queue. That's right. Okay. Let's go to other topics. And, we'll talk about the number of border arrests falling. We have heard a lot about this, of the crisis at the border. The number of people taken into custody along the U.S. southern border fell 28% in June, a drop that U.S. authorities say reflects the early impact of Mexico's crackdown on Central American migration. Border crossings typically rise in the spring and slump during the scorching summer months, but the drop registered from May to June was significantly larger than in previous years, according to Homeland Security statistics released Tuesday. U.S. authorities detained 104,344 people along the border last month, down from 144,278 people in May. June was go ahead.
Is that a political win for Trump?
He'll certainly
yes.
try
He'll
to yes. explain
that,
it
that way. For sure.
Yeah. Well, he has it both ways, right? It's a crisis at the border. Everybody's coming in. It's horrible. The situation has never been worse. Oh, look, we're making it better.
Right.
That's what I think.
Yeah. Yep. A couple thoughts for you know, our listeners to consider. One is that I'm always a little bit suspect about the numbers coming off of off the border. And I think historically, regardless of the administration, CBP has had a very, very difficult time in substantiating some of their statistics and numbers. And I know you'll all be shocked by that. I have not been watching what the weather is.
It's been bad. They actually, at the beginning of June, they had a disaster response for flooding and rain there. There's also in Guatemala, for example, an election. So there's a lot of other factors, again, that we don't really have that context to. So I'm right there with you, Bob, about the numbers. You have to look a little bit more at the context.
Well, 1 month's worth of data is always, you know, it's never enough to really judge whether an impact is
right. And is that has that made a sea change? And
that said, though, it is true that Mexico is now patrolling its southern border, and that would seem to have an impact. You know, and if nothing else, the message filters down that it's harder now than it used to be, and that may discourage some
people.
I
think it's definitely a factor, but is it a full? Does it merit a full course win? No.
But it also raises some interesting questions to me about how long can Mexico afford to continue to militarize their side of the border? I mean, that's a lot of resources on their own National Guard. And I do wonder, you know, they're going to start stepping down their coverage just because of lack of resources. At the same time, the weather churns. And frankly, if you start to think about the harvest cycle that typically has brought more people across the border, there are a lot of elements that would indicate to me that we could be looking at a spike coming in the late summer or early fall. So that would be something that we should really keep our eye on and come back to for a conversation with numbers, particularly the September, October numbers.
Yes, but I'm certainly with you on the numbers issue. Remember, this is a president who said more people came to his inauguration than any in history. He's highly suspect when he tells you stuff.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We love your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back.
Once fixed a prop with a wrench in his bare hands, flew around the world in 8 days.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Jen Smith, Chris Churchill, Bob Griffin, and Ira Fussfeld make up the group. We welcome your letters, like this one from Michael, who says, I have family that has worked in Arizona and Colorado in the hospitality industry. According to my family, the immigrant population of these states are the literal backbone of the hospitality industry. If it was not for them, the industry would come to a grinding halt. It is not just blue states that have immigrant populations.
It's very true, and you know the issue of immigration, the part of the policy considerations of the immigration debate is how important immigration is to a number of our economies, and it's in it's not red and blue. It's whole sectors of our economy. I really question how the agricultural community is going to be able to survive without the immigration population. It's been the backbone of that. You start to think about some of those other industries, you know, the poultry and food industries, you know, and I'm thinking about the supply chain. This is going to create a huge problem for this country because there are not enough people to fill these types of jobs.
Ricky says that. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, Jen. I was going to say, and there's a lot of other issues that are overlooked with immigration, and when it comes to the economy and the workforce, I think people really overlook the Asian diaspora when it comes to. You think of all the shop owners, salon owners, a lot of small business owners are owned by people in the Asian community. There's a little girl from India who just died trying to cross the border in Arizona. Same thing with there's a very significant African population that's now migrating. I think you're going to see those numbers shift, the workforce effect shift for certain.
We got this from Ricky, who says, did I just hear Trump complaining about an Obama-appointed judge when he has appointed two judges to the Supreme Court that have basically legalized gerrymandering? Then Paul said the real agenda was gerrymandering. Consider that the oligarchs' prime objective was to leverage their number one asset, the Supreme Court, to, quote, slam the door on the future gerrymandering legal challenges. This was a blatantly anti-democratic decision, which certainly does not support the one-person, one-vote doctrine. It was no coincidence that the census decision came out at the same time. The sustained census skirmish serves to eliminate the gerrymandering decision from much-needed public scrutiny and outcry.
You know, I hate what's happening with the Supreme Court. Don't get me wrong. Like most liberals, I do. But the court now does have a point. The reason McConnell has centered on the court is that that's how you make law right now. Congress is not doing its job, and gerrymandering and abortion could all be solved at the congressional level. Why is it going to the courts? They do have a point about that.
And we know why, because they don't want they got there under this gerrymander system.
Correct.
and they don't want to say change it. By the way, Joe and group, we just heard some very sad news, and from Ian Pickus, and that is that Karen Hitchcock has passed. The former president of SUNY at Albany, a wonderful woman, a commentator on WAMC, and it really is extraordinarily sad. A great lady, and I'm personally bereft about hearing about this.
She was a longtime host of The Best of Our Knowledge on this station, and certainly a dear friend. And it was very, very sad news. Passed after a long illness, and certainly love to her family, and we'll be. I know the newsroom is working on a remembrance of her that we'll hear at noon today. We've got one more letter, and then I'll move on to another topic, which is from Amanda. The career DOJ lawyers are ethically bound to not lie. No, I think that would be be ethically.
Ethically is what it's meant.
It says ethnically. I'm going to say ethically, incorrect. Bound to not lie to the court. All lawyers are so bound, but Trump has skill in getting people to ignore their ethics. However, these are lawyers who work for the department, not this or any administration. Career lawyers frequently have to argue positions with which they disagree, but that is different from representing new positions that are so different from their earlier arguments in the same cases that at least one of the positions must be intentionally false. I think these lawyers risk more than their reputations that they do whatever Trump's new whim instructs.
Right, which is probably why some of them are a little eager to get off the case at this point, right? Because they don't want to continue to do. There is talk of censure against some of the lawyers who may have said things that were not true. And, you know, I think that's a real risk for them.
For a lawyer.
Yeah.
Did you happen to hear the interview on NPR this morning? It was about 8:30 with the vice president of the union for the border guards in Texas. And he was bemoaning the situation, was saying that the guards are – I don't know if guards is the right word, but he said that they're the true heroes of this crisis, that many of them are spending money out of their own pockets for toothbrushes and for soap. But the reporter, whose name I did not catch, she was really tough on him. I was very skeptical on much of what he said, particularly about the whole issue of the Facebook postings that were really pretty nasty and purportedly done by the guards themselves.
Can't they both be true? I think we tend to paint everybody with a broad brush. Yeah. There may be guards who are heartbroken about the whole thing and want to help as much as they can. And there may be other guards who are very callous and very bigoted and you know.
I agree. I mean, I came away from the interview just shaking my head saying this is such a complex story, but that I think can be solved relatively easy with a clear policy that's more humane than the policy we have now as a government.
Well, we probably need to change some laws, too, which goes back to the point Rosemary is making. Congress is just, I mean, the just
absent.
Absent, yeah.
By the way, that was at 7:30, not 8:30.
I was going to say, I thought you had an alibi at 8:30.
and let's all remember about all the teachers. And let's all remember about the teachers. Jen, this is obviously on your beat, but all the teachers who we know have been bringing things into classrooms because they don't get enough in terms of paper or crayons or pencils.
That's a beyond huge. It's not just crayons and pencils anymore. It's food. It's basic needs, clothing in our own backyards from Berkshire County to Albany. Sure.
And that does get lost, and it should, in light of reports, the government report about a big hairy guard who was touching a young girl under the guise of a physical examination. Give me a break. And there was no investigation of that. This is a government report, not a news report. So, yeah, the good news does get lost, as it does, because it cannot compete with that sort of impact.
Joe, before we go on, I just need to belabor this one point because I think this is really important about the
census.
We love
belaboring here.
the importance of the census is that most federal funding somehow is dependent upon census numbers. So transportation funding for roads, the redistribution of money from the federal tax dollar back to the states, this is all dependent upon the census number. So you're locked in with these formulas for 10 years. There is billions of dollars that are associated with making sure that these numbers are as right as possible. It affects education, it affects the roads, it affects infrastructure. Every element of federal life somehow touches this. That's why I don't want people to sleep on this, and it goes well beyond just the gerrymandering. And it really is about our money going to other places.
Sarah made that point on the panel earlier this week, and as we were discussing whether migrants or undocumented workers should be lying or not participating in the census, and her view is that they themselves, their own groups, self-interest groups, are saying, no, we can't.
Getting the homeless population right is so important.
Mm-hmm. Alan?
Yeah, you're exactly right, Bob. But those are important issues. But I've spent my life around politicians, and I got to tell you, number one on their list is how many congressional seats every state is going to have or whether they're going to lose their job or not.
Right, and that affects the Electoral College, too. Something that should be remembered.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's see. Let's go to another topic, if we can, and the time that we just have a couple of minutes before we go to the break at the top of the hour. So the appeals court has ruled that the president cannot block critics from his Twitter account. The decision may have broader implications for how the First Amendment applies to officials' accounts in the social media era. President Trump has been violating the Constitution by blocking people from following his Twitter account because they criticized or mocked him. A federal appeals court ruled on Tuesday. The ruling could have broader implications for how the First Amendment applies to the social media era. This is an interesting case, I believe.
It's an interesting case. It was a great ruling, but it's not over yet. This is going to end up in the Supreme Court, and again, we don't know where it'll end up. This ruling says that not every account by a public official has to be open in the way that Trump does. He's so obviously putting official business on his account that they ruled it's public discourse. But that's a loophole. What are the rules for when it's public and when it can be kept private?
So two questions that I have. One is that you look at so if you and I have an account and somebody gets on there and bashes us for whatever reason,
you dump them.
We can take it off. Mm-hmm. We have that right. The president, in this case, the ruling is that he would not have that right to do that.
Because it's Trump, it would appeal to many other public, every mayor, every congressman.
If they're conducting public policy on
right.
their side.
Right, yes. Which he plainly is. Right. I mean, the census is a good example. That came out in a tweet. So every citizen of the United States should have a right to be on his account.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, because my recollection of this is that this issue came up very early and that there was a differentiation between the White House and the president's account and President Trump's own account.
Right.
And that he was supposed to, if he was going to do that, use the presidential account as opposed to the
White House
account.
Right.
But they've come to, if Trump puts out a tweet that says, I was never a fan of this guy or whatever the thing is, they're putting that out on White House press stationery now, are they not? I've seen a number of his tweets reprinted as official White House comments under the letterhead of the Office of the President.
Well, and they're being archived by the Library of Congress, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And the archives.
Yeah. I mean,
National archives.
What's interesting to me about this is that, again, I have to give Trump credit for recognizing that the digital world and
Twitter specifically is a great way to communicate with the people of this country and, sad to say, go around the mainstream media. The problem I have, and I suspect most of us have, is the kind of stuff that he puts out there that has not, that is not policy related. The personal attacks, the kinds of comments that just demean the office, and that is a, I'm not sure. Well, future presidents, I think, will use Twitter. I'd like to believe that future presidents will not call, you know, their opponents on Twitter a-holes. You know, that
time will tell.
Time will tell.
I don't know.
Well, if he wins re-election, people will say this is the blueprint.
Well, they're already saying that, just like Reagan, just like FDR, this is a president who is a great communicator. And he can barely speak in sentences, but his genius is that he figured out Twitter in the same way that FDR did radio, for example.
Yes.
Or Kennedy did TV. And this ruling
is
important.
A fireside tweet?
Yeah, fireside tweet. This ruling is important because it's one of a very small but building body of law on how the First Amendment translates in a digital age. We do not have a lot of laws on this, but it continues the idea that the same protections in print or in broadcast should carry over to digital.
And a little more optimistic than yours, because it was a unanimous vote by the court, which gives it a lot more weight when the Supreme Court will review this. Mm-hmm. You know, the problem that I have is that even these repugnant tweets, these bully, immature tweets coming out of the White House. Against the British ambassador. That is a policy statement for our government.
Yes. Right. Mm-hmm. The unfortunate thing, too, is that as someone who works in journalism, I can see that a lot of politicians of both parties are kind of following the lead. There are a lot of spokespeople who are got, including the governor, Governor Cuomo, who are much, much more aggressive and much more spicy, I guess.
I have one small problem with Ira's declaration. I understand what he's saying, that it's a sort of a brilliant move on the part of. But, you know, when you say, I have to give him credit, I don't know. You know, would you give former dictators in other countries credit for having, you know, made mass appeals? I have a problem with giving him credit.
Well, to your point, Rosemary, you were saying that he can communicate. He has figured out a way to communicate.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot been written already about the campaign. That's how he won this campaign. He went right to social media. In a way, even he surpassed Obama.
The weird thing,
Obama,
though, a lot of regular, so-called regular Americans aren't really on Twitter, but his tweets
get... The press is on.
The press, and his tweets get CNN puts them up. I mean, they get amplified through the traditional media, even though he's using an untraditional.
A lot of political scientists have been studying that. And the regular media is to blame.
Ray is ready to do the news, so we have to stop.
When we come back, we will talk about Nancy Pelosi versus AOC, and we will talk about Trump's like for the only Acosta. There is one Acosta that Trump likes, and we'll talk about that as well. We'll be right back after this.
He went in pain to all his brow. That shadows pass.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Leland Sundries is the music we're hearing. His new LP, it's an EP. That means it's shorter. Pray Through Gritted Teeth is the name. He's playing shows in Hudson and Kingston, New York this month. LelandSundries.com. Our playlist online, WAMC.org/roundtable. Quick programming note that tomorrow we will be having our live panel it's a two-hour affair tomorrow, our live panel at the Linda. And if for those of you who have pledged during the fund drive and are planning on attending, we sent out an email. But just so you know, you get here. Doors open at 8:15. We'll have breakfast. The show begins at 9 and will end at 11. If you do not have your tickets left, we do have a few tickets left, and you can certainly get one now. All you have to do is call us at 1-800-323-9262 or just go to WAMC.org. But giving us a call is probably the easiest way at 1-800-323-9262 for a pledge of $100 for a ticket. On the docket tomorrow, in alphabetical order, Rosemary Armeo Fran Berman.
I love my last name.
Yeah. Rosemary Armeo, Fran Berman, Teresa Bourgeois, Vera Carius Kelly, Judith Enck, Libby Post, Sarah Rogerson, and Jen Smith.
Powerhouse group.
That's a powerhouse group. Yeah. So if you would like to join us, we do have some tickets left. We'd love for you to join us. 1-800-323-9262. If you already have tickets, doors open at 8:15. Show will start at 9. We'll be done at 11. And for those of you who will just be staying home and listening, we'll be taking your questions from the audience tomorrow, not from email. So there's that. And then also, we'll be on from 9 to 11 tomorrow.
I like that Fran Berman is calling it Wisdom Fest.
Yes. She has hashtagged it Wisdom Fest. Yes, which is very fun. So we look forward to that. We will welcome you. And that is an event happening tomorrow. So again, 1-800-323-9262. Okay. Now that I have done what Amber has asked me to do, I will go on to other stuff, which I think involved me, for some reason, deleting the other topics. There we go. Okay. So let's talk about Nancy Pelosi and the tensions within her own party. This is an interesting story. It's one that certainly has been going on for a little while and has now once again bubbled over. This came out of an interview, but the New York Times, their headline, tensions between Pelosi and progressive Democrats of the squad burst into flame. Speaker Nancy Pelosi said they have no following in Congress. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York shot back that she and three of her fellow liberal freshman darlings of the left, collectively known as the squad, are wielding the real power in the party. 6 months into the new House Democratic majority, long simmering tensions between the speaker and the squad, Representatives Ocasio-Cortez, Ilhan Omar of Minnesota, Rashida Tlaib of Michigan, and Alana Presley of Massachusetts have boiled over in the most public of ways, setting off a flurry of criticism of Ms. Pelosi among liberal activists and reinvigorating a debate within the party about how to best stand up to the President of the United States.
Ick.
All Ick. I know is that on whatever the election date is, on November 2020, the Democratic Party, all of the members, the squad, the speaker, the whoever else you can think of who's got influence on the electorate, all ought to be holding hands and smiling because every one of them have got to be on the same page if they want to see Trump, if they want to see Trump beaten. And, you know, the intramural warfare right now, maybe it's healthy, but I don't know how healthy it's going to be if it goes on for too long.
Okay. Ira, you could not be more right. You could not be more right. And a lot of people saw this coming. The Democrats are famous for circular firing squads. We do know that in the takeover of the House of Representatives, there were far more moderate seats that got won, purple seats that got won, than a couple of the progressives, although the progressives certainly have the spirit in the Democratic Party because people are really furious at the president.
Okay, I want a shot at this because I think this is media hype. I agree. Headline is ridiculous, and it plays into the male fantasy of a cat fight. Both of those women are right. Pelosi undercut the idea. She referred to the squad's public whatever. And, okay, so AOC was right to say that's public sentiment and it means a lot. But Pelosi was right when she said they have four votes and they were not able to press their appeal further than that. They are both schooling each other, which is exactly what should be happening. And the older woman in this case does recognize their power, and she's teaching. And we are acting like it's a big fight. It is not.
Well, I think it's the column that really fueled this. If you look at Maureen Dowd's column and the way it was written,
good
I had
you.
Real beef with I'll just the tone it set, this like
the snideness.
Rosemary, yes,
yeah.
the catfight.
No, Rosemary,
sort of
you're a big Maureen Dowd fan.
I am not.
I
oh
know
my
that.
God. I think she's been phoning it in for years. I think she's anti-feminist. I think it's a terrible column. And it isn't true. We've been talking about Pelosi and AOC. Somebody wants to set them up as enemies. They are not enemies.
So you only support Trump, not Maureen Dowd. I just want to make make sure. Okay,
Jen, I'm sorry I cut you off.
But
it was Pelosi who made the rather dismissive comment, right? I mean, it's not Maureen Dowd's. I mean, of course she was going to include that in her column if Pelosi is dismissive of AOC and these other three members.
Sure, but it should be a tweet-length thing and not something that, I mean, that was a long column, if anyone.
Yeah, but it wasn't entirely about that, though, either. It was about a lot of other things.
Do you call that bursting into flame? Come on. She's saying, look, you know, I'd be listening to you more if you had more than four votes. Mm-hmm. Politics 101.
Yeah, I think Pelosi is actually in the right on this. I think Pelosi is looking at the bigger picture and realizing that the squad, if they're allowed to, will take the Democratic Party into a direction where they'll get wiped out in 2020.
I think Jen can speak to this too, but AOC is right. Don't dismiss public sentiment. Mm-hmm.
AOC represents a district that doesn't have any Republicans in it. AOC won her primary with 16,000 votes.
She is now speaking to a national audience.
That's true, but she's doing it from the safety of a district where she doesn't have to worry about anybody, a Republican, beating her.
Same with Pelosi, for that matter.
Yeah, that's true of Pelosi, too. But Pelosi is also thinking about the fact that many of her members do represent those districts. As Alan said, many of the people who helped the Democrats gain seats last time around in 2018 won in relatively conservative districts.
One more point, and then I'll shut up because I've had my say. But there's an analysis in the article that we all looked at, I think, and following up on Maureen Dowd, where an analyst said, look, you have two women here with different priorities, and Pelosi's is just what you're talking about, elections, unity that you talked about. She has bigger issues involved than AOC, who wants attention brought to the progressive agenda. Those are conflicting, and so of course they're going to have disagreements.
I also think it's old news. So, you know, in terms of having both a lengthy column and a lengthy story analyzing this issue between, I guess, technically five people, doesn't actually show any pathway building or doesn't actually put the two down together. I would have much rather read a column where you have Pelosi and AOC in a room talking out their differences. I think they're perfectly capable of it. I think both of them are you know, self-aware and smart enough that if they had that opportunity, they would have and they should, whether it's in front of the public or behind the scenes. But I think it's a non-issue in terms of all the other issues we were talking about this morning about, you know, moving forth policies that matter and actions that are necessary in this country.
But, you know, I think there's a cautionary tale here, though, and I think if you look at what happened with the Republican Party in the Freedom Caucus, that part of the loss that you saw in the last congressional election was the fact that they were pulled too far to the right. And I think that's the case that you see in Alabama in the Senate race, among others.
Right, but
I think the Democrats could face the same issue of being pulled too far from the left. And I think that I think Ira's point is really spot on, that, you know, I think they're going to have to go into a room, have a conversation about what's truly important, and they're going to have to moderate on both sides. But if there's if you pull in either direction, I think you're going to leave a large majority of the voters sort of scratching their heads.
Pelosi has consistently done that, starting with her own leadership, by the way. AOC did end up, and the rest of the squad
Absolutely.
Did support her.
Yep.
I thought AOC benefited from media hype that she perhaps didn't deserve. She, as Chris pointed out, the district is a relatively small district. I know it. It's where I grew up. She's moved to another part, but we both came from Parkchester in the Bronx, so I've sort of followed her. She got a lot of attention on election night because she beat Crowley, who had been there 20 years, who was one of the Democratic leaders. And in that sense, it was a major story. But from there forward, she's photogenic, she's outspoken, and she's a good story. And I think she is important, and I like her.
If you listen to the governor yesterday in our conversation, you will hear that he obviously was having the same struggle that Pelosi is having with the progressive label and not being labeled progressive.
Yeah, we did hear that. I just have to go back to that incredibly sexist thing we just passed here. AOC is a power in the same way that Trump is.
I wouldn't have done it.
In the same way that Trump is. She knows how to use social media. She is self-aware. She is very articulate, very passionate, and she won that election because she did what the guy who had been there for 20 years did not. Not just because she's cute and good looking and dances really great.
On the night of the first debate, Stephen Colbert had her on as his sole guest.
Yep.
When she walked out, yes, a New York crowd, but when she walked out, the place went.
She's a rock star.
But to your point of being a national figure at this point, she is a very popular national figure.
Yeah, I wanted to hate her. You know, here's a young woman. I did, because for the same reason. She's cute, she's young, she's got everything I don't. I'm jealous. I wanted to hate her. I cannot. She is smart. She does her homework. She works so, so hard. And she's real. And she deserves the attention and the appreciation she's getting.
But all that maybe is true. But
Nancy Pelosi knows this too.
But if you're going to tell me which one has a better feel for the pulse of the country, I would go with Nancy Pelosi every day of the week.
Well, you said that.
I think that AOC, because of the district she represents and because of the echo chamber on Twitter that is also not the real world. She can have all the followers she wants, but that's not the real world. If AOC is allowed to pull the party too far to the left, they will lose in 2020.
She doesn't have to pull it to the left. She's got the country talking about her green agenda. Nancy Pelosi didn't do that. Neither did Hillary Clinton. AOC did. She's a really good representative of a new voice, a young voice in this country.
That's true, but sign me up with Chris on this one. I tell you right now, again, all the political science, all of the survey research has shown that the reason the House of Representatives went Democratic was not because of the far left. It happened because the middle of America decided in its voice to support a more moderate approach that the Democrats had been espousing. Rosemary, I don't think you're right.
Is a modern?
You never think I'm right.
There's room for both voices. Sometimes I think you're right.
Yeah, I don't think that being critical of AOC suggests, at least in my case, that I don't respect her and what she's done and how well-spoken and all the other platitudes that you gave her. I don't disagree with any of them. I just think that she is a freshman congressman in a difficult time, and Pelosi, I'm sticking with her wisdom right now.
I like what you said, Rosemary, from the very beginning, that she is being schooled.
Yep. I think that Nancy Pelosi is as much admirer of AOC as I am, and sees in her a younger version of herself. And I do not think it is a catfight. I think it's an older woman who says she's the future.
By the way, Kellyanne Conway is using that catfight.
Yeah. It's just a male trope, and the media uses it all the time. I hate it.
All right. We have only a moment left, but let us talk about the labor secretary and the Epstein question as to whether he should go. The president yesterday defended.
I was shocked when I heard that. I was like, wow, I didn't expect that.
I'm glad that you ended with this, Joe, because anytime we talk about this, I feel like I need to go home and take a shower. So rather than starting with it,
it was a pretty tepid defense, though. I think there are stories circulating this morning that Acosta will be gone, you know, within a week or two.
How could a man say, I feel badly for Acosta and not say anything about the women, which is just a typical response
point.
From the
same way he did with his aide, was beating up his number one and number two wives. So I feel really bad for him. He did a great job in the White House.
Unless, of course, the principals in this know a good deal more than they are letting on right now, and whether the president himself gets implicated by the Epstein thing, and that's, I think, what they're worried about.
Well, then he's making it worse by, you know, showing any sort of support. I mean, this is just, at face value, on paper, a wrong issue. The fact that he's been recommended a sentence, that it's almost like against the law. If you look at across the states, the minimum sentences for any kind of crime like that is around 5 years, up to maximum sentences of 25 plus years. Yep. There's a guy in Providence who, you know, got just accused in similar charges, and he's getting 25 years.
Yeah, but what does Epstein know? What does Epstein know about the president where they had 20 women in a room with just the two of them and this calendar group and the rest? There's more here than we are.
But it doesn't excuse the sentencing for the crime.
Right. Wouldn't even call it a sentence. It wasn't even a sentence. I mean, absolutely. He got to leave jail for 12 hours every day
of
the week.
To go to work.
He had to sleep in the jail, but otherwise he could do whatever he wanted.
It was terrible. But Acosta would be gone under normal circumstances. You'd stick a fork in him. I don't think there's any question about it.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, we don't know what Epstein knows. We don't know what Acosta knows. There's more to this than...
Well, Acosta never should have made it through the confirmation process.
Well, that's the point.
Shoulda, woulda, coulda.
Right. Yeah. All right. We are out of time. My thanks to everybody. Alan, Jen, Chris, Bob, Ira, and Rosemary. A very spirited panel. Thank you very much, all. We'll see you tomorrow, and we'll be right back after this.